This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Sam Moore, is best known as the Sam in Sam and Dave, the soul music duo of the 60s that had the hits Soul Man, Hold On, I'm Coming, When Something Is Wrong With My Baby, and I Thank You. Sam and Dave were also famous as one of the acts that inspired the John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd duo, the Blues Brothers. The Blues Brothers' signature song was the Sam and Dave hit Soul Man. Sam Moore and Dave Prater broke up in 1970, although they reunited several times. Dave died in a car accident in 1988. Sam Moore has been performing solo, but he has a new album of collaborations with such singers as Bruce Springsteen, Sting, and Fantasia. One track has received a Grammy nomination. The album was produced by Randy Jackson, who's famous as one of the judges on American Idol. Moore really sounds great. Let's hear a track before we meet him. This is his duet with Wynonna, I Can't Stand the Rain.
I can't stand the rain against my window. Bring back sweet memories. Against my window, because she's not here with me.
When we were together, everything was so good.
That's Sam Moore from his new CD, Overnight Sensational. Sam Moore, what a pleasure to have you here on Fresh Air. Thank you so much for coming. I have to say, you are still in great voice. Have you been singing straight through the years that you weren't recording?
Yes. Well, you know, you have to make a living, Terry. You know, and whether you have a record or you're recording or whatever, you still have to pay those bills at home. I had been working in different capacities, from the oldies market to the ships and all these good things. So the answer to the question, I had been singing.
Now, you started to sing in church. Would you describe the church that you first sang in?
The church I first sang in. I think the first solo I may have had, I was about 9. I remember the first time I was given a solo to sing with the adult choir. I forgot the words.
Oh, no.
I did. It was a most embarrassing situation, because here's this little guy standing up before the big choir, and I have this solo to sing, and they're going to be singing behind me, and I forgot the words to the song. That was the most interesting part of my church. And before that, when I was a little boy, my parents were so happy to start grooming me to be this minister, you know, of gospel. And that was fine until I started taking up a collection from the people in the streets. And my mother caught me one day, and she was standing in the doorway in Miami, Florida, and she had come in from school, and she came in through the back, and I was repeating my Lord's Prayer over and over and over and over and over and again, and I was also singing as the choir. Then I would say the Lord's Prayer over and over and over and over again. So I had a cup that I'd gotten out of the house, and I put it down on the side, and I was asking for a collection after the service, and she said, "I don't think that's funny. I think you better stop." And that's the beginning and the ending of my church experience.
So you sang gospel, and then you met Dave Prater, who was the Dave in Sam and Dave. How did you and Dave Prater meet?
It was a fluke. I was working at this club in Miami called the King of Hearts, and I had heard about this young man that was doing the amateur hours in Miami. And eventually he got out to where I was singing, MC, comedian, whatever you want to call it. I wasn't good at any of it, but it was a good job. It was a job to do. And he came out there, and I got his name, and I said, "Oh, you're the young man that's doing Sam Cooke's songs and whatnot." And he said, "Yeah, but I don't want to do that this time. I'm going to do a Jackie Wilson's." And I said, "What song would that be?" And he said, "Dogging Me Around." I said, "Okay, okay." And he did. He was okay until he got to the verses. And when he got to the verses, he had a meltdown. I'm being a professional and knowing this young fellow by the name of Jackie Leroy Wilson, I knew him well enough. I knew all his songs. I knew everything that he was doing. So I said, "Look, I'll try and help you out," which I shouldn't have been doing. But like I said, it was a fluke because I stayed up there, and there were some mistakes and some things done. Dave being nervous and my being a klutz. it caused Sam and Dave behind the nervousness and the klutzness to be together for almost 21 years.
Now, it was the way that you kind of bailed him out of the verses that he didn't know. Was that how you developed your way of duetting and alternating with each other?
No. No, that came later on in the studios when we started recording. Because they never could, at the time we started recording at in Memphis at the studio Stax, they were trying to get us to harmonize, and that wasn't working. So we started doing a call and response sort of thing. I think the closest we ever came to harmonizing with any song for the time we recorded there was like "Something Is Wrong with My Baby," or mm-hmm. "You Don't Know Like I Know," or "I Take What I Want." But that was the closest of harmonizing that Dave and I came. But most of our songs, if you hear the older things that we did, was call and response.
Well, when you started singing together, you were signed first to Roulette Records, but then you mm-hmm. were signed by Jerry Wexler to Atlantic Records, and that's when things really took off. He wanted you to record at the in Memphis at the Stax Records studio, and Atlantic had some kind of tie-in with Stax. Why did mm-hmm. he want to take you down to Memphis?
I don't think they were looking for these two guys to be, you know, that big or whatever. I don't know. I know they could. I figured they could make money with us or whatever. But when we got down there, I was so disappointed because I didn't like any of the songs that they introduced to us. I didn't, because I was, you know, I was into that Clyde McFadder, the Drifters, and Big Joe Turner, Ray Charles. I was into that mold, and I wanted to, you know, do, songs like Jackie and Clyde and all this stuff, but it didn't work out that way. And when they started giving us the songs and with the titles of Jody Ryder and Jody Get Your Gun and all this stuff, I said, "Oh my God, our career's dead." I'll show you how much I knew.
Isaac Hayes and David Porter wrote most of your hits, like "Soul Man," "Hold On, I'm Coming," "When Something Is Wrong mm. with My Baby," mm-hmm. "I Thank You." When mm. you first met Isaac Hayes, mm-hmm. did he give you a sense of the sound that he heard you doing?
No. when I first met Isaac coming down the street, I thought he was the most strangest looking person I had ever seen. You must understand, at that time, Isaac had hair on his head.
That's hard to imagine.
I know. He had hair, Terry. He had on a pink shirt and green, I think they were green pants. I'm colorblind, so I could be wrong. It could have been another color. But I think he had on green pants with a white belt and pink socks with white shoes. And I went, oh, my God, what is this coming down the street dressed like that? And I basically started crying because I went, oh, my God, what is, you know, what's happening here? Why would they do this to me? But again, show you how much I knew. Soon after I met David, he was an insurance runner at the time in Memphis and working at a store on the corner of Stacks. He was dressed with pants, looked like pal pushers, you know, and a little short hat and this sweater. What are you doing with a sweater on that time of hot summer day? I mean, it was hot, and the pants were real high, and he had on these funny-looking socks with rivets in it. And I said, oh, boy. And that's how I met those two.
And did you feel so different when they started giving you songs?
I did. I felt like I wanted to go home. Please send me back home.
Even after they gave you the songs?
Well, when they started playing them and saying, these are songs we've come up, you know, we were writing for you and Dave. And I'm standing there, and can't you find another way of doing it? It's sort of like a take off on a country song. And I actually, if you go back and play it, I actually interpreted it that way. I sang it that way. You know, I was so dissatisfied with this. I didn't try to do anything with it. I just sang it like they were playing it for me and recorded it like that.
Okay, so when they gave you Hold On, I'm Coming, which was a huge hit for you, your first really big hit, did you like that?
No.
But it's such a great record. What did you do to make it more to your liking?
Nothing. I think it was more, I didn't do anything, Terry. You know, up to that point, I was just singing the song. I sang the song as straight as I could, because I wasn't familiar with that kind of, with what they were trying to do, and I was trying to feel my way through.
Well, let's hear it. This is Sam and Dave, their first really big hit, Hold On, I'm Coming. That's Sam and Dave, recorded in 1966, and my guest is the Sam of Sam and Dave, Sam Moore, and he has a new CD, which is called Overnight Sensational. Now, you were saying you didn't like the song when Isaac Hayes and David Porter, the writers of the song, gave it to you, but did you imagine the song not only like with your voices in it, but also like with the Memphis horns behind you?
To move on with the Sam and Dave thing, I was comfortable after, believe this or not, after Dave and I split up the first time, and I had a problem because it's not that I felt as though I was better than Dave or better than what was being given to me. I knew that I could sing other songs other than Hold On, I'm Coming, Soul Man, Hold On, you know. I knew. And I wanted to stretch my wings, and with what was happening in our career, in our personal lives, I actually took advantage of that, and I walked away in 1969, the first time I walked away. But it was not that I wanted to break up the act. I just wanted to do other material because I felt myself being pigeonholed into something that was going to come back and bite me, which it did.
Bite me? You mean like you couldn't get out of that? You always had to
right.
do those hits.
Absolutely. And you know what? I tell you the truth, Terry. It's still happening today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it still happens today. I mean, all over the country, people are still saying, well, I like that. I like what you're doing, Sam. I like your voice singing. Sort of. But May, why? Why you don't have another guy? Why you don't have another guy? Just go get a guy and call him Dave. And I'm going, what? You know, and it would work. It worked. So it was actually Sam and Dave became an albatross around my neck for a long, even as you and I are speaking now, you know. So it would bother me for a long time.
Well, because Sam and Dave is such an important part of soul music history, I want to ask you a few more questions about that. Is that all right?
Sure.
Great.
Sure.
Now, I've got to play Soul Man because it's such a well-known recording of yours. What did you think of this song when you were given it? And was it a song you wanted to do?
Yes, and well, no. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
No, I didn't want to do Soul Man, you know, because I felt it was putting us in a. You must understand it was the pinnacle part of coming out of segregation, and it was a message there, but I didn't feel it that way. I felt like it was more bluesy kind of thing. I had no idea the song was going to get as big as it did. I had no idea.
Did it seem like a novelty song to you?
Well, no, it was not like that. It was, I know it was something about it. I think it was, to me, it was just too many. I'm a soul man. I got sick of that. And I tell you, over the years, I've turned the song around, over, flipped it around. I've done it all kind of ways not to become so boring because I know I have to do it, you know.
Right.
People love the song, so if they love it, you know, you have to shut your mouth and just get on up there and do it, you know. Stop complaining, but no, I didn't like it when I first got the song.
You can put your hands over your ears because we're going to play it now.
Okay.
Terry. This is Sam and Dave, one of their really big hits, Soul Man. That's Sam and Dave recorded in 1967, Soul Man, another song that was written for them by Isaac Hayes and David Porter. Well, it's a great record, you know, no matter what you say.
Yes. I mean, listen, everybody overrules me because they'll look at me when I say no. They say, well, you know what? You don't like it, but we're gonna still play it, and we'd like to hear you sing it. So you know what I do, Terry? I sing it. I've been able to now of late to do it and put in my it's done much differently at the end than I basically would have done it in the past. So it takes away all the all the stuff. I used the audience as my choir, and we go to have church with it now.
Now, when John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd created the Blues Brothers and they started singing Soul Man, how did you first find out about it?
The first time I saw Danny and John do the song, I was watching Saturday Night Live, and they were doing it on their show. I'm not sure whether they were calling themselves the Blues Brothers then or not. I'm not sure. But I saw them do it, and I said, oh, that's hip, you know. It's a parody. It's okay. You know, it's fine. But then when they recorded it, that was fine also. I took issue in their doing the song after we played a couple of dates in New York City, I remember so well. And the kids walked up and they would say, you know that song, Soul Man? Yes. That you guys just finished doing? Yes. You know the song that the Blues Brothers did? You know, I know you covered it. I'm telling you, Terry, they did.
That's sad. That's really sad.
And now what you're doing, you're trying to explain to them, no, they covered Sam and Dave's Soul Man, and they said, "Yeah, right." But anyway, we like it, like the way you all do it better than them. And I went, "Oh man, no one at that time would believe that we were the original artist on the song."
It sounds like you had a pretty volatile relationship with Dave when you were performing, and it sounds like maybe he was a kind of volatile guy. I mean, he shot his wife.
How did you know that?
About him shooting his wife? I read about it.
You did, huh? Well, that was part of it, but, you know, we also had a drug problem.
Both of you?
Yeah. And after a while, it started telling on what, you know, the act was not dynamic. The act, sometimes they would show up, I didn't. Sometimes I would show up, he didn't. And it started telling on us on stage to the point that there's some footage that we were trying to upstage one another. We were being insulting to one another. And that spilled over into the audience, so it put it was not after the other part of 12 years that we were together. It didn't look very good at all. It was very, very, very bad.
Do you think drugs had to do with him shooting his wife?
No, not that. They was just one of those. You know, he was, I don't know what to call it. I don't know. Because I wasn't there. And when he did it, we had a concert to do in Atlanta, Georgia. I remember so well. And when he showed up, I remember saying to him, trying to talk to him, and he didn't want to hear what I had to say, and this is what caused the relationship to really get, you know, quieter, that's the only word I can find to say, because the relationship was not wherein he and I socialized. Mm-hmm. We never socialized together. Only time we did, unfortunately, was when we were doing dope. You know, other than that, we didn't see each other. He had his friends, I had mine, or whatever you want to call it. But I don't know. I remember saying to him at the end, "I'll sing with you if I must. I'll even record with you if I must. But I'll never talk to you again." So for the next 12 years, Harry, I had nothing to say to Dave Prater Jr. He had his dressing room, I had mine, and when we entered the stage, most of the times, I didn't listen to him. Now, you wouldn't believe that, but for the next 12 years, I didn't hear Dave. Whatever Dave was doing on stage, I tuned it out. That's how bad it was.
My guest is Sam Moore. His new CD is called Overnight Sensational. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sam Moore, best known as half of the 60s soul music duo Sam and Dave. Moore has a new CD called Overnight Sensational. Well, Sam and Dave broke up in 1970, although you did get back together again a couple of times. But after, I guess it was after you broke up in 1970, you recorded a solo album for Atlantic Records. That was never released until, I think it was 2002 it was actually released. And there's some incredible stuff on that, as we'll hear in a moment. But what was the story behind this album, and what was it like for you? You know, you were telling us about your frustrations recording material with, you know, as half of Sam and Dave, that you didn't that you didn't really like that much, and that you didn't think showed off your range as a singer. So what was it like for you to record this solo album?
I guess it was okay. You got to understand, Terry, I'm glad you asked that, because there are people that would have asked me about that. You know, I was getting high at that time. I was still influenced with the drug scene and whatnot. And when I was resigned back as a solo performer with Atlantic, I was getting high, and they put the producer turned out to be King Curtis,
the saxophonist, who's also featured on that album.
Yes, and also was a musical director for Aretha Franklin. You know, and also for the Coasters and whatnot. Very good producer, and I think I tell you, Terry, if he had been alive today, I'm not so sure we would have been still together, but if working with him, he was, if you listen to the different songs that that I was doing and performing, recording wise, he was looking for a place for Sam Moore, and, not a Sam and Dave, revisit it on anything like that. He was looking for a place to put Sam Moore, to give him a place in the industry as far as recording, to get me out of that Sam and Dave mode.
Well, we'll talk about this more, but let's stop here and hear some music. And this is a track from that album. The album's called Plenty Good Lovin', and it was released about 4 years ago. It's still available. So it was recorded in 1970, released about 4 years ago. And this track is called Part-Time Love. And you mentioned that King Curtis was, among other things, Aretha Franklin's music director. Aretha's featured on piano on this, right?
Yes. Yeah. I said something to her the other night in Washington, D.C. at the honors of in Washington. And she was there honor and introduce Smokey Robinson. And I walked over and I said, her assistants, I said to him, I said, he said, "Do you hear Part-Time Love?" He said, "Sound like I hear Aretha. I said, it is Aretha. So he went over and he said something. So when I went over to her and I said something, she said, that's me? She said, is that me or is that Billy Preston? I said, no, that's you. She said, oh, okay. And then when she, when they played it after the other, you know, in the hotel or whatever, she came and she said, you know, I was pretty good then, wasn't I? I said, yeah, you were good. You're still good, Aretha. So, yeah, that's Aretha on there.
Yeah, she was okay.
Yeah. She was all, as they say in the hip hop world, she was all right.
Okay, so this is Sam Moore from his 1970 recording. The album's called Plenty Good Lovin', and this track is Part Time Love with Aretha Franklin on piano.
It was early in the morning, and things are not right. You see, I had a little fight with my baby last night. And that's why I got to leave her. And the reason why is I got to find me. Oh, Lord.
Before we heard that track, you said that had King Curtis lived, you think maybe you would have continued to work together, and you really liked working with him. But
yeah.
he didn't live. He was actually murdered. Would you tell us about the last time you saw him?
That was the time when he was... I was going up to his apartment, his townhouse, and I remember going to see him because there was one more song that had to be done to finish the album up. And as I was coming up the street, Aretha was across the street, and she was also having a visit with him because she was getting ready to go in the studio also to record. And as I was walking up the street, they saw me, and they saw this young man and King Curtis get into it, and that was, as you well know, that was an altercation where King got stabbed, you know, and I saw her jump out the car, and she was screaming, somebody get the police, and I stopped. Now, why did I stop? I'm glad you asked. I had paraphernalia on me.
You were afraid you'd get busted.
Yeah, I could have gotten busted. So I backed up and I turned around and I went back and caught the train and went back to my house and down on 54th Street. And by the time I got there, my girlfriend asked me, did I hear about it? And I said, yes. But that was the last time I saw and heard from King.
Do you know what that fight was about?
No. I have no idea. There have been different stories told and that I've heard, and you know, there's a lot of hearsay about, well, this happened or that happened. But I personally, I have no idea what it was all about.
Now, you were telling us earlier that you sang in the church when you were young,
mm-hmm.
But it sounds like you had a pretty rough and maybe street oriented life as a teenager. You were shot twice in your teens.
You know, my mother and my grandmother did. They were wonderful, wonderful, caring, loving. They loved their son and their grandson. But you know, when you're a little guy, you got little man's little boy, a little man syndrome. You know, you want to be seen, you want to be heard, you want to be accepted. So, and you're watching things and watching people, and you want to emulate the people that you're trying to, you want to emulate is not the way to go in life. So, yeah, I started out real young, being a little, as they said, a little thug. And I got in a lot of trouble in those times, and they made the relationship between my mother and I sort of strained. My grandmother, I could do no wrong, you know. And I played two against the other. You know those conditions, you know. When you play one, if mom said no, you go to grandma, and grandma say, okay. You know, she slipped me something, give me something, knowing, you know, I've done wrong.
Did music save you from that kind of life? I mean, once you actually started performing professionally, were you still in that kind of, were you still trying to be a thug, and were you still in a thuggish world?
Yeah. Yeah, I was still doing that. I mean, come on, I was still doing thuggish things and still going, working at night in the nightclubs and, you know, and hanging with the thuggish and the things of that nature. Oh, God, yeah, I was a little gangster. Are you sorry you asked me now?
No. So how did, was it just like age that got you out of that?
No, what it was, I never got out of it. You know, I didn't get out of it. But if I did, I would have never got into drugs.
Right. Oh, I see your point.
Right.
I see your point.
I never did get out of it. I was always into something, you know. I was always doing something. I was always running from one place to another. I was always ducking and hiding. And I enjoyed it because it was not a game. It was the way of life as far as I could see it. You know,
things pretty calm now in your life.
Oh yeah, well, heck, what am I gonna do with these bad knees? No, I'm pretty quiet now as I've gotten older.
And you gave up drugs in what, 82 was it? Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was 81. Yeah, about 82. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad you're still singing and that your voice still sounds so good. Thank you so much for talking with us. It's really been special to have you. Thank you.
Why, thank you so much, and don't be a stranger.
Sam Moore's new CD is called Overnight Sensational. Here's his duet with Bruce Springsteen, Better to Have and Not Need.
Oh, somebody, the sermon today is about a song.
Man, listen.